Hey, it's Weezone. You're listening to Current Events, Politics, Presidents, and much more with Adam Lept and our official presidentologist, Dr. Ron Feinman, on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor every Monday morning, starting a few minutes after 10, right here on WWGH 107.1.
Well, goodness sakes, it is a few minutes after 10 in the a.m. It's Monday, 5/13/19, has a nice musical ring to it, so it must be time, drum roll please, for mid-morning coffee break. And along with yours truly, Adam Lept, sometimes known as the computer guy, sometimes known as the music trivia guy, always known as the amusing guy with lots of wisecracks, I bring to you our official WWGH presidentologist, Dr. Ronald L. Feinman, from his domicile in perpetually warm Boca Raton, Florida, to talk about politics, the presidential candidates who have thrown their hats in the ring or thrown their hats out of the ring since we last talked, and we might even debate some policies. Who knows? I would say stay tuned for the next 40 minutes or so just to find out, because whatever happens, it'll certainly be lively. Let me see if I properly attach the duct tape, maybe send some thoughts and prayers, drop or two of super glue, and plugged in the right cables. Dr. Ron Feinman, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you this morning?
Fairly fantastic for the most part. See, I almost threw you a curve by pretending I was Scott and calling you Dr. Feinman, but I'm Adam, so we'll just call you Ron, or maybe Ronald, or maybe in deference to
Ron is preferred, yeah.
the very popular president, we'll call you Ronnie. But one thing I don't want to call you Ron is a name that rhymes with Ron.
That reminds me when I was 10 years old and my mother called me Ronnie. I actually refer to Ron. Ronald's too formal, except as Dr. Ronald Feinman, but I like to be called Ron as if I'm a friend of anybody I speak to.
Yeah, I don't want to call you Don or Donald, and a couple reasons why.
Oh, God, no, please. It's not a very popular name now, as we know from yesterday's news, yes.
Now, of course, when you were a child, Donald Trump, although he was around, he wasn't as known, or certainly as notorious as he is today. So people kind of associated Donald with Ronald McDonald and McDonald's. Of course, nowadays, Donald has a bit of a different connotation. We'll talk a little bit about names first. And first on the agenda, again, is Donald. And it's one of those names, Ron, where people say maybe we were 40 years old or older. It's a fairly common name, just like the big ones, James, John, Robert, Thomas, Michael, etc. Michael is still common, though it's lost some steam in the last 10, 15 years or so. But
yeah, I love the name Michael. I think it's a great name. Yeah.
My dad's name is Michael, so it'll always be a favorite name of mine. And as I've said, I know people of every age, from school age to my dad's age or older, who are named Michael. So it's one of those names that has stood the test of time, but it is losing steam, which is kind of unfortunate. You know, there's even a female Michael, Michael Learned, the great actress. So
yes, well, I think Hurricane Michael, which hit the panhandle of Florida, doesn't help the name Michael too much.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. We've never had a Hurricane Adam, which is interesting because it starts with an A, and every A storm there's never an Adam, which, you know, Adam is like Michael. It's not as common, but it has stood the test of time. And like with Michael, someone named Adam could be any age, from a newborn to 100 years old, or kind of in the middle, like myself. But anyways, I mentioned earlier, and we've talked about this, we've joked about it, Ron, Donald has become a little less common since we changed presidents. And interestingly, maybe just due to her beauty and just due to the uniqueness of her as a first lady, Melania has gained a little bit in popularity. Though I would say Melania, I never really liked Melanie, but I do like Melania. That's kind of a nice name. So that's gained a little bit in popularity, of course, for girls. And Donald has lost popularity, and it continues to, for multiple reasons. Again, Ronald McDonald's maybe not being the most healthy place to eat, and people wanting to stay healthy, and could be part of it. And again, could be the popularity, the notoriety of Donald Trump. And as we mentioned, Ron, Trump, although he certainly isn't our most popular president and may or may not be our least popular, it seems like his popularity is geared toward older people, people that are past childbearing age. So that further makes the naming of a baby after the president to be less likely to happen for the younger people, who many times are not exactly fans of the Donald. Compare that to all the babies named John due to the popularity and the youthfulness or the good looks of President John Kennedy. So we often find these presidents influencing people's names. Do you think that will continue to happen, Ron? And do you think if Mayor Pete becomes mayor, we might find 25 years from now a lot of college males being named Pete? Is that something that you've kind of witnessed? Again, I mentioned about Kennedy and about John being a common name anyway. And you know, we've had a lot of presidents named John, but Kennedy seems to have rebooted the popularity.
Yeah, I think the name Pete will be popular, not Peter. To me, it's a big difference. I like Pete. I don't particularly care for the name Peter. But, of course, people call Pete who are named Peter. But I just think Pete is more of a cool name than Peter, in my mind.
But we would agree that Donald Trump has probably not helped the popularity of his first name. And it's not just his popularity in general. It's that his popularity, you know, love him or hate him, I'm just talking just in a general sense, is more skewed toward people that are past childbearing age. And that is further.
Well, I think that's true. But also, a lot of people named Donald probably, I've known people named Donald who call themselves Don. They don't use the full name. It's too formal. Like, I prefer Ron to Ronald. So I think if people use the name Don, even the name Donald, it isn't as much of an issue. But if they want to be known as Donald, that's more of a controversy.
Yeah, yeah. His junior is known as, he calls himself Don, right? Donald Trump Jr.
Yes.
I know he's one of your favorite first family members.
Oh, I just adore the guy.
I know your admiration and adulation of the gentleman. So, you know, Donny Osmond probably helped.
I hope he subpoenaed, yeah. Oh, actually has been subpoenaed by the Senate Intelligence Committee headed by Republican Richard Burr, and is causing a big controversy. A Republican senator, head of the Republican-controlled Senate Intelligence Committee, is demanding he show up, and he's apparently not planning to show up. I'd like to see what they're going to do about it, the Senate Intelligence Committee.
Yeah,
but
you know, said,
Donald Trump Jr., I think, needs his comeuppance, honestly. He's an arrogant SOB. How's that?
Well,
I didn't say the words, I said the letters.
But I think Donny Osmond may have helped Don or Donald or Donnie, and maybe Donald Trump is nuts. But we shall see. Certainly,
Donny
Barack,
Osmond, yeah.
Barack, which
Donnie,
is not a
Donald.
Yeah, not a common name at all. I mean, it's certainly not as common as Michael is, but we've seen more Baracks being born than before Mr. Obama became president. And
will
happen.
And now there's a boulevard in Los Angeles named after President Obama.
Yes. And we have a Barack Recreation Center in Columbus that I've talked about. So a president's name will often go into the spotlight. As interestingly, most of our presidents have had very common names, but there's been a few sprinkled that have had some unusual names, as well as names
Millard
that are well.
Fillmore.
Right, Millard. You don't meet a lot of Millards, and you know Grover is probably. I kind of associate that with Sesame Street. Real, I don't mind the name Grover.
Well, actually, Grover Cleveland's real name is Stephen Grover Cleveland, S-T-P-H-E-N. I don't know why he chose to be known as Grover rather than Stephen.
No,
I think
it would
be better to keep it as Stephen. I don't know why. That makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
And Woodrow Wilson is Thomas Woodrow Wilson. I think it'd be a lot better to be Tom Wilson, but that's not what he's known as.
I just think of Grover from Sesame Street. Of course, I also think of Oscar.
Yeah.
And you think of Oscar, you think about a grouch, even though Oscar's not a bad name, but it just kind of sounds grouchy. I was reading a name because, you know, I'm really interested in words, Ron, and names, you know, and etymology, that kind of stuff. That's one of my geeky qualities. You probably know that back like in the 1890s, I think Bertha was like a top 50 name, and no one ever names his or her kid Bertha. You just associate a Bertha as being unattractive and heavy, and not necessarily will that be the case, but it just has that connotation. And
yes,
you just don't.
Actually, I knew someone named Bertha. You know, an older person, elderly person years ago.
I remember.
So, his name is, it's not used much anymore, but it was once used. Yeah,
I remember on Three's Company once. I don't know if you saw this episode, Ron, but Jack.
Yes.
John Ritter's character. What a wonderful actor we lost so early.
Yes.
Anyway, it was one of the best sitcom actors ever. I mean, just amazing what that guy could do and his timing. But anyway, he was just having girlfriend troubles, and many of the shows concentrated on. And he was upset. He was at their pub, the Regal Beagle, and then he a woman who had a daughter about Jack's age told Jack, "Oh, I'm sorry about the girlfriend troubles. You should meet my daughter Bertha." And Jack was saying, "Oh, Bertha, she has to be unattractive and heavy." And then he says, "No, thank you," kind of rudely. And then Bertha walks in, and she is absolutely drop dead gorgeous. And you know, don't judge a book by its cover or by its name. as you know, I think Melania, that's kind of a name. It's kind of a beautiful sounding name, and I think it kind of fits her well. But that isn't always the case. You just don't really know. So don't judge a person by his or her name. You might find yourself surprised. And just as kind of a jovial note, Ron, you don't meet a lot of women named Gay anymore, do you? That one time was actually a very common first name for females. But you don't
G-A-Y-E, you mean, right?
Well, G-A-Y, but even G-A-Y-E. You don't really meet a lot of women with that first name anymore, do you?
No, I've only maybe known one with the E in my lifetime, yeah.
But at one time, it was fairly common. Just sometimes names, they change their meaning, and that's an example. You know, we can giggle about it, but as a parent, what do you do with the name and how and its implication? Or a person currently with that name who's very well known, is he or she popular? And it may be a case, Ron, where, you know, if you're probably be still teaching college in 20 years, you'll have people in your class, men in your class.
In 20 years, I don't think so.
Yeah, well,
but who knows?
You're almost ageless, but let's say you do, and, you know, you will have.
Well, I've taught for 47 years. I can't imagine teaching 67 years.
I think you would agree, Ron. You might have a male student in your class named Don or Donald, and thinking, I wonder if his parents are Republicans, because you would probably find it hard to believe that. That gentleman's parents would be Democrats or be supporters of Trump. I mean, Trump isn't really a Democrat or Republican. It's more he's just kind of one of a kind. So you almost look at people that way. And it's just interesting to see how names have an implication. Of course, what I'm also getting at is the very unusual naming of the new first baby of Prince Harry.
Archie, yes.
And his lovely wife, Meghan Markle. Archie Harrison. And you just, you know, as people were saying, I said Archie, like, you know, Archie Bunker or Archie from the comic strips. And again, I like the name Archie. That's actually a really cool name, and it's very friendly sounding. Some of these names are just too unusual for my taste, or they just don't really sound attractive, Bertha being that example. But, you know, Archie, as people were saying, that's the name of a guy that you play pool with or have a beer with. And, yeah, that is kind of the implication. But it doesn't really sound very royal, because royal names are supposed to be very prim and proper. Were they just trying to buck authority? And Meghan Markle, you know, for multiple reasons, she's multiracial, she's American, she's not a typical bride of a royal. So are they just Harry was known, Ron, as being a little unusual, not afraid to do things
rebellious.
Maybe outside the norm, yeah, rebellious or
yes.
Do you think that's part of the idea is to that they're trying to be different and have a little bit of shock value, or do they just feel that is a good name for a royal baby? What do you think?
I think they like the name and they don't really care what anybody thinks. They're going to do what they want, which is fine.
So Harry is thinking, well, I already married a multiracial woman who's American, an actress. I believe she's a divorcee, and that's not common. But we love each other, and that's what's most important. It's obvious they do care very much about each other, and I agree. That is 90% of the importance of a marriage anyway. And they figure, well, we want to name our kid something which doesn't really sound like a royal name, not like Lewis or one of the other recent royal names, you know, Charles. We'll just name him Archie Harrison. And obviously, tongues will wag. People will be upset.
You don't worry about tongues wagging. You do what you think is right.
That's what's important. I don't see why not, and I think that's great. Yeah. I think being rebellious and doing it in a proper way is quite cool. And
I wanted to go back 1 minute to the name Gay. Are you aware, I'm sure you are, of a writer, a male writer who's still alive at age 87, Gay Talese, who did a lot of public affairs writing and baseball writing about Joe DiMaggio?
Yes, Sinatra, very much, and it's usually a woman's name, but it can be a guy's name. It can also be
G-A-Y. Gay Talese. He's 87. He's still around, and he's a major author, you know.
And it can also be a last name. So, but we've seen where names do kind of change their connotation. And, you know, I know, Ron, you're not that old, so you don't remember back to the late 1800s where Bertha was just a very common women's name.
No, I don't remember.
I just can't think of anybody naming their female child Bertha. Just with that kind, and I don't even know why the connotation comes in. It's not really that bad of a name. It's just, why is it associated with someone who is unattractive and heavy? And I don't know if that Three's Company episode where I was just rolling on the, you know, I'm laughing thinking about it, that this drop dead gorgeous girl comes in, her name was Bertha, and it's like, what was her mother thinking? I think her mother wanted shock value. Her mother wanted to see the day where she would introduce her daughter to a lovelorn gentleman like Jack, but not not really explained. And the mother wasn't bad looking either. So it's a case where you just don't judge a woman by her name, because many times girls, they take after the mother. And as I recall, the mother was fairly attractive also. And it's like, well, Jack just judged it solely by the name. And it's like, Bertha. I can't be that desperate. And she walks in and it's like, just don't think a little bit before you take an action. It's easier just to say no when you meet her than it would be to say no just because she has a name that wouldn't be attractive. And
yeah, I wanted to mention this. Gay Talese was born in 1932. Can you imagine a person naming their son today Gay as a first name, G-A-Y? I don't think today that would happen, but in 1932, nobody thought much of it.
Yeah, things have changed, and society changes. And as someone, and I had one of my listeners email me last week, indicating that I'm just how much I love words and language. Yeah, I do. And you know, again, George Carlin, of course, he's had an influence as that cerebral kind of humor where you look at names and words and how people use words and you know that I love puns and alliterations. And it is interesting the implication that a name has and the popularity of a name. And someone like a president, how does he influence the popularity of a name, be it an uncommon one like Barack or Millard? Millard Fillmore, considered one of our most obscure presidents, one of our worst presidents.
Yeah.
And you do hear that name occasionally, but it certainly isn't up there in the popularity.
Yeah, well, I always like to make fun of Chester Alan Arthur. Like, with the name Chester Alan Arthur, why would you have your name be Alan or Arthur, not Chester?
Yeah, well, you could go by Chet. Chet's a pretty nice name. And Chet Atkins,
yeah,
in the music business, and a revolutionary person, so... there are certain implications of names. You know, Elvis, for example, it's just a name that really never really caught on, despite the popularity of Elvis Presley, probably because it's kind of not really a very good name, and you still just think of Elvis. I mean, people ask me, okay, hi, Adam, where's Eve? Yes, I hear that, and yes, it got old a long time ago.
Adam Schiff's name, Congressman Schiff's wife's name is Eve.
Yeah, that's why I giggled about that, because it's like they were born to be together. But it's like anybody named Elvis, you're going to assume that he's going to be a musician, and maybe he hates pop music or just is tired of hearing about it. So you just look at the implication of a name, and it's kind of fascinating. And again, even the
how about Ulysses? Like Ulysses S. Grant. That's an interesting name, too.
And there's not a lot of nicknames for Ulysses. It's like, okay, Adam doesn't have any nicknames, but it's kind of a short name. Everybody's heard of it, but it's okay. I mean, I'm not crazy about it, but I've learned to tolerate it. Ulysses, I would change my name because it's hard to spell. There's no nickname, and you know, you as a first initial, that just doesn't fly too well. So, despite President Grant being a great a historical figure in our military and not a bad president by any means, Ulysses never caught on, and probably like Elvis, that's probably the reason why. So there is an influence there, and you know, we will continue to see people giggling and delineating Archie Harrison as the new royal baby, and I agree, it's okay to be a little rebellious. I like the name Archie. It does sound friendly, but certainly if you have a contest between Archie and Lewis and Charles, I don't think anybody would pick Archie as a name that sounds like somebody who has royal blood, but that's okay. As we said, 90% plus of the importance of the relationship between Meghan and Harry is they love each other, which they obviously do. They have a beautiful, beautiful, healthy baby, and all the more power to them, because Archie Harrison is actually kind of a cool name anyway. Maybe people are jealous that they named that kid something which sounds friendly and timeless. And
it makes you think of the actor Rex Harrison from My Fair Lady. How's that?
that's fine. And I will say that Meghan is quite a fair, quite a fine-looking lady, to put it mildly. So nothing else. Harry certainly married. You know, royal brides always are very attractive. And so Meghan certainly keeping in that tradition. So let's go ahead and turn to politics after we spent the first half of the show talking about names and about the royal family. and about not prejudging someone whose name is Bertha, and a few other things. Ron is the author of a blog, which he has published for the last 10 years, called theprogressiveprofessor.com.
It'll be 11 in August, yes.
Interestingly, Ron, your journal article from yesterday is about a person who kind of uses a nickname or a variation of his name as his first name. Beto O'Rourke, which is, I guess, kind of interesting. You talk about he unsuccessfully tried to unseat one of our least popular congressional members, Republican Ted Cruz, last year.
Cruz, yes.
And he may or may not be running for president, but it looks like his presidency is losing steam. And I would agree, he certainly is an intriguing candidate, but I think he should spend his money that could be used on campaigning on something else. I don't think there was much of a chance to begin with, but in the future, maybe we'll see. He has charisma, but again, his stand on some beliefs and some things in his past may concern a few people. But for now, I think he's kind of quietly throwing in the towel and moving on with his life.
And I think Mayor Pete has interfered with him in the sense that he's been the rising star to some extent, and he got in the way of Beto, I think. Yes.
Yes, Mayor Pete and his husband with a rather unusual first name, Chasten. So maybe we'll see if Mayor Pete were to win the election, might Chasten become a more common name, just like we've seen with Melania. That would also
And Mayor Pete would be 39 years and one day old on inauguration.
As I recall, Chasten's
more chance than Beto O'Rourke right now, yes.
Chasten's like 29 or 30 years old. That would be extremely young for...
I think he's actually 32. He's 5 years younger,
okay.
I believe.
Okay. I was thinking he was born in 89, but either way, 32 is still quite youthful. Of course,
And a teacher, middle school teacher.
There's a bit of an age difference between Melania and Donald, but...
A little bit, like 24 years?
Yeah. Well, it's okay. Again, as long as they love each other, that's what counts. We talked last time, Ron, and I kind of stimulated your brain a bit about presidents coming from the Rocky Mountain area. Haven't had many. We've had candidates. We've had well-known politicians. But it just seems like that's not a breeding ground for presidents. Obviously, the very populous states, I mean, California, again, being our most populous state, we've had some presidents there, but relatively few considering the population of California. Obviously, many of the eastern states have brought us presidents, including several from the great state of Ohio. And I know that kind of stimulated you into writing some more features about the western states. Have you had any more thoughts about that since we talked last week? And I guess we're of the agreement that the geographic diversity of our great country should also be reflected in our national office holders, our presidents. Do you see that changing? We haven't had a president from Ohio in a while, so even these states that are well known as having presidents may not have brought any of late. Do you see that landscape changing? Maybe, you know, 20, 30 years down the road, we'll have one or two Rocky Mountain presidents, we'll have another Ohio president, or are things going to kind of stay the status quo?
I would think Ohio would always be in the picture, although we haven't had one since Harding died in 1923 in the White House. But as far as the Rocky Mountains, I think if it's going to happen, it's going to happen from a state like Colorado, which continues to grow, or Arizona, which already has had, of course, John McCain as a candidate and Barry Goldwater. I don't think smaller states than that will really be likely, but I think Colorado and Arizona are the two major places in the West, other than the West Coast, California and Washington State and Oregon. And Oregon's never had a candidate, go all the way, and Washington's had some like Scoop Jackson. But really, it's mostly been California and Arizona, even as a actual contender. But I think Colorado is a state to watch, yes.
So last week, after we talked, Monday of last week, you wrote The American West, a rare location for presidential contenders and nominees historically. Of course, we all remember Senator Gary Hart from Colorado, who had aspirations of being the Democratic presidential contender, Governor Richardson of New Mexico, Governor Bruce Babbitt. We've heard him many times from Arizona. Frank Church of Idaho. There's one we don't hear too much of. So also Senator William Borah of Idaho about 100 years ago. But we did talk
about it in my first book about Senator Borah, yes.
Yeah, we did talk about Colorado with one of my favorite names, a former governor, John Hickenlooper, and Senator Michael Bennett contending for the Democratic presidential nomination. But, you know, there are so many presidential Democratic contenders. I've just lost track of all of them, but I guess those two are in the mix. And we go to the Pacific Coast. We're familiar with Kamala Harris of California and Eric Swalwell of California, Governor Jay Inslee of Washington, and Tulsi Gabbard. That is far, well, west as you can go, although Alaska technically is further west.
Hawaii.
Further west, but Hawaii, up there in the Pacific Ocean. So we're not quite sure who might win that nomination, but geographically it is fairly diverse, and we may see some changes. And many people like the rising star characteristics of Pete Buttigieg from our neighboring state of Indiana. And we'll just have to find out exactly who ends up at the top of the heap there, and if he or she challenges Donald Trump, or does someone step in and win the Republican nomination. Whatever happens, it'll be an expensive, well-fought, and certainly humorous, controversial presidential race. And it seems like we break that record every single time, and no exception. No exception.
$2 billion spent on the last campaign by all sides. I think it'll be more like $3.5 to $4 billion this time. There'll be no limit.
Well, if someone in media, it'll be a good time for newspapers and TV and radio selling advertisements, and that helps the business that I'm in. So, no objection there. Although honestly, hearing and seeing all these ads gets annoying. It's already getting annoying, and it's going to get a lot worse. So, all I can say, folks, is brace yourself. You wrote back last Wednesday, Ron, May 8th, is the 135th anniversary of Harry Truman's birth and the 74th anniversary of the end of World War II in Europe. If I'm not mistaken, Ron, based on your own demographic, weren't you just like a couple months old when World War II ended?
I was a little, almost 5 months old when the VE Day came in May 8th, yes.
Do you remember that? You were kind of a precocious kid like I was. Did you remember that happening, or is that kind of before?
No. I do remember Truman in the last years of his presidency, like in 1952-53. I remember who he was, but not before that. The first event I remember is when the Rosenbergs were executed in 1953 after 6 months of Eisenhower. That I remember seeing on TV and being shocked by hearing people being executed, you know, and was like 8.5 years old. That's the beginning of current events, not history for me.
Yeah, and I kind of think about what songs do I remember, and I mentioned Three Dog Night, you know, one of my favorite bands, and them being popular from the late 60s to mid-70s. I remember them, the beginning of the Beatles recording solo material, so when I was in, you know, first or second grade, anything before that is history. Certainly remember the Nixon administration, remember the McGovern-Nixon election. That stuff is clear as day as far as I see it, so we precocious.
Were 8 years old, but 7 or 8, most people are starting to be aware of the world around them in more than themselves.
Yeah.
That's the key age, 7 or 8, yeah.
Yeah, we precocious kids, I mean, we start fairly early. But everything else is something your parents told you about or something you might read in a history book. So, mm-hmm. You mentioned that there are a few veterans left from World War II, and it's very sad. As the only survivors would be at least 92 if they entered war service in the last months of the war in 1945. I know I often see men wearing Vietnam veterans hats, and it seems like every year they look older and older. And it's, I guess.
Well, they're 50, they're around 70 or over.
Yeah.
50 years ago already, almost.
Yeah, so just remember it being 70. Young men, and it's like, well, reminds me how time marches on, and just that very difficult war, and, you know, you just feel for someone wearing that hat. Knowing that.
Same with the Korean War. That's only a few years after the Second World War ended, so there's not too many Korean War veterans either.
Yeah. I think the Korean War, Ron, is one war a lot of people don't even know it occurred except for a tremendous TV show about it. And that's...
It's terrible. Yeah. It's called, often called the Forgotten War.
Yeah, I
but
mean...
It's 33,000 Americans, and it's in a lot of harm.
Yeah, it's just interesting. The TV show MASH... just one of our most successful and well-acted shows ever about a war that isn't really well-known and just an intriguing aspect of the Korean War that it might
and
have been
interestingly,
good.
We could be going into war again against North Korea because Kim Jong-un is playing games with Donald Trump and Donald Trump's being a sucker so far. I don't think there's any chance of an agreement the way things look now. We'll see what happens, but... Meanwhile, I think Trump is also leading us into possible war with Iran and Venezuela, as I wrote about this week. It's a scary situation we're facing.
Harry S. Truman, where S doesn't stand for anything. It stands for either of his two grandfathers. They argued over which name to use as his middle name, so his parents just named him S. Of course, you know that already, Ron, but that's a presidential fact that I always found interesting. Anyway, 135 years ago, as of last May 8th, last Wednesday, President Truman was born. He's one of our, consider one of our best presidents, ranking five or six, as you write. He proved that an ordinary man, the only modern president not to have attended or graduated college, could be an effective president, a voracious reader, proving that not all education and drive comes from a college degree, but from ambition and motivation to overcome one's shortcomings. Of course, I do giggle a bit as I read that, Ron. I'm sure you know what I'm giggling about. Is Truman up there in presidential heaven analyzing Donald J. Trump as someone who...
Oh, my God, yeah. Is he? And he is using foul language, four-letter words, which he was very good at. And I think he and Theodore Roosevelt would really pummel Trump. They're both very outspoken presidents, Truman and T.R., and they both, I think, would be unable to accept Trump as part of their fraternity.
I mean, Trump doesn't have the MBA of George W. Bush or the J.D., the legal degree of many of our presidents. He has some college education. As I say, I don't think he is stupid. He's very street smart. Again, an IQ, I don't think he will come close to Carter or Clinton or candidate Buttigieg, men who are very book smart, obviously at high IQs. But street smarts are important. But issues with Trump relate to his often, well, ineffective use of the English language, out of no other way to say it, and just not really coming across as that educated when he speaks, and sometimes doing what my mama told me not to do, not thinking before he talks, or in Donald's case, not thinking before he tweets. And I think you'd agree, Ron, that Truman, and you mentioned both Roosevelts, yeah, but especially Theodore and others, Nixon and Reagan, who I think had a presidential demeanor about them, just looking up there and looking in heaven and thinking, well, Donald really should act presidential, start talking, yes, more like the leader of the free world. And even if you don't have a lot of education, again, Truman being an example of someone who, by presidential standards, was not educated, didn't matter, he still spoke well and is considered one of our well in our top 10 in
presidents. In 1948, he gave the Republicans hell and it states an upset victory. If he could be around now, he could defeat Donald Trump because he knew how to give hell to the opposition more than almost any president ever done.
I said there are many things that make a good president. I've talked about how Buttigieg's youth and lack of experience, especially no experience in a national office, can be overcome by his obvious very, very high intelligence. And I think he's got good street smarts also. You need that to be a mayor of a college town. I definitely would concur with that. But the many things...
May I bring up the subject? I want to make sure we cover it. The fact that all but six presidents have lost elections. Only six have never lost an election. I published that on History News Network last week, and it's gotten a lot of spin from people writing about it.
So with Donald Trump having held his first elected office...
One of the six who's never lost an election.
Right. As of now, he hasn't. But if he were to lose, he would no longer be on that list. And you know, Donald Trump is someone who doesn't like to lose, and that's a good attitude to have as a president, as an athlete. That's not a bad quality, and it will go along with a little bit of arrogance. And Trump certainly is arrogant, but I think that's necessary if you're in high office, if you're in competitive sports. That isn't a bad thing. It's just the way that you carry it. And if Trump were to end up leaving office before the end of the term or lose the election, how much of an ego burster, was that a word? Burst or blow to his ego, Ron, would that be?
He would blame it on Obama or Hillary. You know that. Everything is blamed on somebody else. And now he's going after John Kerry, claiming that he's telling Iran not to negotiate, as if Trump wants to negotiate. He has never said he wanted to. Now he seems to be thinking about negotiating with Iran. But he's going after John Kerry, claiming that he has broken the Logan Act. That's preposterous. He has not. And even Iran says that it's been no discussion with John Kerry. He might talk to them, but he's not giving them advice. That's crazy. He makes up his own stories.
Well,
I hope he ends up losing so that there's only five presidents. And I want to point out the only presidents other than Trump that have never lost are George Washington, Zachary Taylor, and Dwight D. Eisenhower. And also, and they're all, of course, military people. And also, interestingly, Woodrow Wilson and James A. Garfield. They're the only five other than Trump that have never lost an election. Even Calvin Coolidge lost a school board election in Northampton, Massachusetts, when he was much younger. So it count any election or trying to run for something and being denied, like John F. Kennedy trying for the nomination for vice president in 1956 at the Democratic Convention and not getting it. Everybody has lost an election except those six. Again, Trump, Eisenhower, Taylor, Washington, Garfield, and Wilson. It's a very interesting group, only those six.
Yeah,
this is something nobody had ever found that I did research and realized, my gosh, this is a common thing that presidents do lose elections on the way up or after, like Martin Van Buren, you know, losing after when he ran on a third-party line. And T.R., you know, after, and also with mayor, lost the mayoralty before. But, I mean, everybody's lost something except those six.
Yeah, and Reagan lost a primary, then became one of our most popular presidents with two resounding victories.
Exactly.
Nixon also unsuccessfully ran after being a successful, very visible vice president. Then he resigned. So sometimes this popularity that goes up and goes down, and Reagan being a prime example. First you don't succeed, try again. And I'm sure Reagan is glad that he did try again, because he was very popular during those 8 years and won two elections by a pretty big margin, even though he had previously been defeated. So
the second time against you and my favorite Fritz Mondale.
yeah, I just never quite know what's going to happen. And Donald Trump, we might see a burst to his ego. And didn't he mention, Ron, that if he loses, he should get like 2 years kind of back?
Jerry Falwell Jr. saying that he should have 2 years added onto his term. That's illegal and unconstitutional. It's ridiculous. And Jerry Falwell Jr. himself seems to be involved in a sex scandal whereby he had where he had Michael Cohen help him before the campaign, and therefore that's supposedly why he endorsed Trump early on, because Falwell Jr., like his father and many other evangelicals, have their own sex scandals or their own scandals in their closet, and they want to cover it up. It's such hypocrisy, really.
I know we've joked about this before, but is there a chance that if Trump does lose the election, that literally he will have to be physically removed from his chair at the desk at the Oval Office?
It sounds like it, but that could lead to, unfortunately, bloodshed in the streets, a civil war. That's what's scary, because I don't think he's going to be willing to leave, and he has to be removed, and hopefully the election, he will not have a close race where he could claim fake results, you know, which he can, of course, do. You know, he always loves to do that, but hopefully it's a massive defeat, but it's going to be a problem. Who is the right candidate? And right now, Joe Biden is way ahead, and he's like 2-1 in New Hampshire over Bernie Sanders. Sanders is slipping, and I think, you know, it seems like Joe's in good shape, but you never know. It's a long road until the nomination, so we don't know.
Has that ever happened where a president did not wish to relinquish office, even if they had to kind of politely ask him, or is it always the diplomatic way? And we saw Obama.
Always diplomatic. Adams lost to Thomas Jefferson is one case, and so many others. You know, all along, there's never been a challenge where somebody did not leave office when they were supposed to. There might have been bad feelings and bitterness, but they've always had dignity. But Trump doesn't care about that. That's why I think there is a danger of bloodshed in the streets if he decides he's not leaving, because he has to be removed if he loses. That's all there is to it. And then at the end of that term, if he's there, he has to realize he's leaving. He cannot stay beyond 8 years in office.
What would actually happen if Donald Trump says, okay, it's 11:59, 59, and 59 seconds on the 20th of January, 2021, and I have news for you, folks. I'm not leaving. I'm sitting here in this chair, and that's how it's going to have to be. I'm not leaving office. I'm not relinquishing. I am still president, and that's how it's going to have to be. What would happen?
They would have to remove him because they have to obey the Constitution as everybody else does. He cannot be allowed to remain in office. But he makes such a horrible image for himself. But that's why I think he's mentally deranged, because he doesn't even care about his image. So he probably wouldn't care how he would look if he was trying to resist. Hopefully it's not going to come to that. Hopefully he will be defeated soundly.
Do you think that really could happen?
Anything with Donald Trump is possible. When you think of all the outrages that have gone on in his administration, and some of them we've talked about, some we haven't, I think it's possible, and it's terrifying, because that is a way to divide the country and poison the atmosphere for the next 4 to 8 years.
So it actually is conceivable, and That might be something.
Anything is conceivable with Donald. In fact, I worry that if we had a September 11th attack, he could declare martial law and suspend the Constitution. What would we do if he did that? Would we just say, okay, that's the way it is because of an attack? George W. Bush didn't do that. So I just worry that he could try to declare martial law and act like an Adolf Hitler type. And I'm not trying to overuse Hitler, but Hitler, of course, used a burning of the Reichstag fire, which, you know, the actual Reichstag fire, which he actually arranged to declare martial law and start going after people that he wanted to eliminate. So I'm just worried because I think anything is possible. This man has no limits, and his party, people around him in Congress and also in his cabinet and his advisors are willing to do anything he wants. They refuse to oppose him, and that's outrageous.
So no matter how you slice it, Ron, the next year and a half or so
in this
country will be one for the history books, one for anybody interested in journalism, as I certainly am, people talk shows, people gossiping, people prognosticating. It will be a unique time in this great country leading up to...
A dangerous time, I think, for democracy.
Yeah, leading up to possible change in the presidency in just over 1 year and 8 months, if my math is correct. When Donald
Trump... the inauguration, but it's a year and a half to the actual election, November 3rd, so a little less than 18 months, yes.
Right, but in terms of the if Donald Trump is unseated, how will he leave office? Will it be in the dignified way that we saw Obama and other recent presidents do it, or will he kind of sit in his chair and say, I'm not leaving?
Every president has...
Yeah. So, don't really know, but the bottom...
Think of how Bush Sr. felt when he lost to Clinton and Perot in 92. You think he was happy? No. But he was dignified. He acted appropriately. He met with the president-elect, and he helped him to get ready, and then they became friends over time. So, that's the way it's supposed to be.
Well, whatever it is, Ron and I will have lots of things to talk about, as we always seem to. And like always seems to be the case, time has flown, and our time has come to an end. Talked about names... Trends in names, presidential names, which might be influenced by the popularity or lack of popularity of an office holder. Talked about people who've never lost a bid for political office. Discussed what may or may not happen if Donald Trump were to be a one-term president. Of course, leaving time for wisecracks, prognostications, and always a surprise or two. Thank you again, Ron, for being with us on The Talking Place.
Thank you very much for having me.
Have a great rest of your Monday, and we will talk to you again soon.
Thank you.